Right. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. It's the same day. RCFB Talk 78. We've got an interesting topic tonight. We always like to vary it up. We're going to be talking about collegiate club football. And looks like, wow, that was lightning fast. Our guest is already here. That's really nice. So I'm going to go ahead and let him up, and we're going to have a chat. All right. Welcome. Go ahead and introduce yourselves. I know we have, are you both on the same account? I know you were thinking about that.
Yeah, no, I'm here. This is James Grega, head coach of the Ohio State club football team. And I've got here with me my starting left tackle, Jordan Griffith Simone.
Welcome, guys. It's so great to have you both. This is something interesting because we like to vary it up and learn about areas of college football that may not be as widely known. Now, at RCFB, we are familiar with the NCFA. We're familiar. We've listed the annual champion on our sidebar for quite some time before the pandemic. So I just wanted to welcome you guys and welcome our audience as they kind of come in, because we're going to be having fun right now talking about National Club Football Association, as well as how it works, how the league works. And then we're going to talk, obviously, about Ohio State. And I should say, for those of you out there who are not familiar with the NCFA, Ohio State right now is the consensus number one. In the coaches poll right now, they have all first place votes. So they have 100 total points out of 100. So congratulations on, at least for now, being the consensus number one team in your division.
Thanks very much, guys. I appreciate it. Excited to be here. Thanks so much for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Bobek.
Hey, yeah, it's good to finally talk to you, by the way. I mean, we've been trading emails for a little while to set this up, so it's always wonderful to hear voices and say hello. So for those who aren't familiar, guys, could you explain how the National Club Football Association works?
Yeah, so as best I understand it, the NCFA was founded in 2009, and it's teams that are not sponsored by their university's athletic departments. They are, for the most part, student-run and student-led, and they usually operate out of the club sports or rec sports department at their respective universities. A lot of teams in our league do not have a varsity athletic-sponsored football program. We're one of a handful in our league that are, obviously, we have a varsity-sponsored program, and then our club program in addition. But teams in our league, like Wright State, for example, down the road in Dayton, they don't have a varsity-sponsored football program, so their club team is their school's football program. So right now there's about 20 teams in the NCFA, and I'd say about half of them have varsity-sponsored football, and the other half do not, and their club team operates as their school's only football program.
Yeah, that's definitely a fascinating part of it. Because, I mean, in addition to, you know, yourselves at Ohio State, Michigan State, Pitt, et cetera, you've got programs that, as you said, don't sponsor varsity or don't really field football teams like Vermont, you know, George Mason, Miami of Ohio. Sorry, I was waiting for that joke. Sorry about that. Rutgers doesn't play. They would have been my go-to, but they don't have a club football team. But let's talk about that. So, and as you said, it was founded in 2009. I believe the first season was in the following year in 2010. How did you both get involved? Now, I know, obviously, as a coach, you were there longer. Why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this?
So I was a player myself back in 2012 and 2013. I played quarterback for the Ohio State club football team. And at the time, the club football team here at Ohio State was really in its infancy. It, same with the league, was founded in 2009 and then joined the NCFA in 2012. And I joined about halfway through the 2012 season and then started the entire 2013 season as quarterback. And back then, I mean, it was really kind of bare bones. We didn't even really have coaches at the time. It was really just kind of student run and, you know, it was full contact football. But at the time we had two volunteer coaches and, you know, not a lot of support from a coaching staff perspective. So, I mean, it's grown a lot from then when we were kind of just calling plays in the huddle to now where we've got a full coaching staff of at least six and we're all volunteer. We all have other day jobs or full-time students, but You know, me personally, do it because I love the program. It gave me another opportunity to play after my high school career was over, and then helped me start my coaching career. But I guess I'll let Jordan kind of talk too about his experience since he joined us as a freshman in 2019.
Absolutely. Thanks, Coach. Yeah, just to introduce myself, Jordan Griffith Simone, left tackle for the Ohio State Club football team. I came in as a freshman in 2019, so our first national championship season. And I initially, I'm from Durham, North Carolina, alum of Hillside High School. And I initially had my heart set in going to a HBCU in Delaware that they offered my major, and I received a full tuition scholarship from that school. But after the recruiting process didn't work out there, I didn't know what to do next. And then I got a full tuition academic scholarship from Ohio State. So somebody just mentioned that, hey, club sports are a thing in college and you can travel and you go to different schools. So I just Googled if Ohio State had a club football program. And sure enough, the team website came up. I was able to fill out the recruit questionnaire. The team was just coming off their first division championship. And it looked like the program was going in a great direction. So I sent Coach Greg an email, filled out the questionnaire, and he immediately responded to me. He was like, hey, we'd love to have you. You're coming to Ohio State. That's awesome. And I showed up in 2019, and the rest is history. The program's been running great ever since. And that's really how I got here.
You know, and for those of you listening who may not be familiar, again, as I said, right now in the poll for NCFA, Ohio State is the consensus number one, but they also, as you know, as was mentioned, they won the 2019 national championship as well. Obviously, there wasn't the 2020 season like in many divisions, but then also coming right back, the 2021 national championship. So your guys are the reigning two-time champs. We've already kind of touched on this a little bit with kind of how you both found your way into it. And then Jordan also mentioned that. How do you find players? What's a typical way players find themselves into these club teams? Because I should also say this is obviously tackle football, you know, full uniform. These are full-on teams that are just, you know, they're not officially sponsored by the universities, but they have some structure in play within a structured organization where there are, you know, travel and championship games. But how do you find most of the players that come and play?
Yeah, it's kind of evolved over the years. You know, when I first started playing, it was really just kind of at the involvement fair that every university has at the beginning of the year. You go out, you know, on your campus green space. Every student organization has a table, and you just kind of try to find, you know, find kids. Hey, that guy looks big. Let's go talk to him. Let's see if he can play some football. And it's kind of evolved from that to now where we've got the program in such a place where we're starting to recruit high school seniors. You know, we're going to some of these D2, Division II and Division III football camps. And I'm going and helping to assist, you know, coach and help run those camps and trying to meet with kids who might want the big school experience but can't play at the Division I level. Guys who are getting recruited by Division II, Division III, or NAIA schools. But still want the big school experience. And so that's where we kind of come in is we tell these kids, you know, we don't have maybe the facilities as a club program that the Division II and Division III schools will have. But what we do, what we can offer is the opportunity to still play football, full contact, 11-on-11 football, and you still get the big school experience. And you get to go to Ohio State, one of the top three or four schools in the country in terms of size. And so that's kind of the recruiting pitch we have. And that's, you know, now we're, you know, in conversations with high school seniors, you know, having them come out to our games. And, you know, we're following, you know, all the recruiting stuff that any Division II, Division III coach would be doing. So it's really evolved over the last decade. But kind of how we found Jordan was kind of the step in between putting out a recruiting questionnaire and, you know, making ourselves visible, not just on campus, but also via social media and those things. So it's evolved over the last 10 years, but I really like where we're at right now.
You bring up a great point. I mean, going and playing club football at many of these universities, you're graduating from solid, prestigious schools. Obviously, Ohio State, Michigan State, you know, many of the others that are out there. I keep mentioning those two only because off the top of my head. You know, And I just, before we keep moving on, I do want to remind the audience, we are welcoming, our guests are welcoming questions. So if you have questions about club football, NCFA, and some of the nuances of it, they're happy to field your questions and do their best to answer it. Obviously, you know, it's not like we have the commissioner right in front of us or something, so they may not be able to answer on behalf of all teams or anything like that. But I noticed you guys are in, for example, the Great Lakes Conference. And it comprises seven teams. How many games do you typically have in a regular season? Are you going to end up playing the six other members, or is it rotating around, or is there interconference play?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So our team, we are in the Great Lakes Conference, and we will play everybody in the Great Lakes Conference this year. Since our conference is so full, we're all the way with 7 weeks out of an available 9 weeks to play.
Six. If you include us, there's six other games.
Yeah. So about six other games that we play. So our schedule is kind of tight. We do start after the traditional college football season starts. We start week three of the NCAA D1 football season. We kicked off last week with essentially a home and home with Ohio State's varsity with Toledo, University of Toledo. But yes, there is interconference play also. This year, we don't have the room on our schedule for all but one game. This year, we are playing Denison University's JV team. They are a Division III school about 30 minutes away from us here in Central Ohio. But last year, we also played Oakland University. They were not in our conference last year, so we traveled to Michigan to play them in the non-conference. And we also hosted the George Mason Patriots out of Virginia. They came up here for our series, and of course, we played them in our national championship last year. But the biggest thing I could say is that, and Coach Greger would probably agree with me, is that there's realignment in the league almost every year, just due to the fluidity of club programs and the funding that some schools may or may not get. So conferences change from year to year, but generally Ohio State has stayed in either the Great Lakes or a Mid-Atlantic West type of conference.
That begs a question, because I know there is, as you said, some fluidity among the programs year to year. And one thing I was impressed by the NCFA website, you can rotate, you know, year to year and see which teams were playing, because, you know, some have been around. I mean, Fort Lauderdale, we've talked about them many times on RCFB, because they probably should have stayed. That was their strength. That made sense for that university. That made sense for what they were capable of doing. And now they're kind of, well, we'll see what games actually get finished this year. But we'll set them aside. I mean, I love that you mentioned Oakland, by the way, because I think I first became familiar with NCFA because of Oakland, only because somebody in RCFB, we pride ourselves in having the school logos for every school that plays football at any level or used to. And somebody had Oakland flair, and I'm like, what is this logo I've never seen before? And they said, well, we have a club team in the NCFA. And I think that's fabulous. And I know the first championship you guys got in 2019 was against Oakland, and they've won a couple of themselves. But not to get too far afield from my original thought on a question, what do you think makes what allows a club football program to stay year to year and continue to be successful? I'm not necessarily meaning winning championships year after year, but some have appeared and some have disappeared. What would you do if you were creating a club football program to keep it, you know, as something that lasts year after year and continues on?
You need great leadership, both at the student level and then at the coaching level. A lot of these programs, the team we just played on Sunday at the University of Toledo, obviously have a varsity sponsored program and then a club program. And I've really been impressed with the team over at Toledo with their student leadership. That was a team that started from scratch in 2020. They started laying the groundwork kind of during COVID. And then their first year was last year, and they were in our conference, and then they're in our conference again this year. But I think the first thing is you need great student leadership, because 9 times out of 10, these club programs start with a student body, and there being a general interest for a club program at that school. And so it starts with student leadership and making sure that the student leadership, it's handed off each year to additional great student leaders. And then from there, making sure you get a competent coach and a competent coaching staff in there that can install and instill, you know, basic principles, basic, you know, basic playbooks, and at least be able to be competitive. You know, if you play, you know, some club teams, they'll play a 6-game regular season. We're playing a 7-game regular season this year. We have the opportunity to play 10 should we reach the national championship game. But it really comes down to having great student leadership and then taking that student leadership and being able to have a handful of coaches who can put together a good game plan every week, give their kids a chance to win, and then making sure that you're being smart about money. A lot of these teams are self-funded and don't get much, if any, money from the university. So making sure you're smart about how you're spending your money, where you're spending your money. You know, we usually, if a team comes to me and they ask for advice, the first thing I tell them is those first 2 years, don't even schedule games outside your conference. Just play your conference games. Because a lot of times what happens is these club teams, the first 2 or 3 years, they might only have 20, 25 kids. And if then all of a sudden they're really excited about the program, and they try to schedule a 7-8 game season, and by that 7th or 8th game, they barely have enough kids to field a team. So the programs that are first coming up and getting started, you know, usually have great student leadership. That's where Toledo, again, I can't talk enough about them, because they came in their first year in the league last year, and rather than having 20, 25, they were pushing 40 kids, and had a really competitive roster. You know, we just played them on Sunday night up at the Glass Bowl, and they have a really good roster, a really good coaching staff. And I think they have staying power in the league. And so that's what it comes down to: great student leadership, great coaching staff, and making sure you're budgeting your money well, because you know, you're not getting a ton of backing from your university.
That brings up another follow-up. You know, logistically, what is it like to run a club football program week to week in terms of, because, I mean, it isn't just, you know, as we know with some of the larger varsity programs like at Ohio State, it's a huge undertaking to equip a team, run a team, keep it moving so that, you know, the coaches can just focus on the coaching. But for you guys, it's a lot more, everyone wears multiple hats. Could you talk about how that works in practice?
So it's kind of a checks and balances system. So we have 5 student officers. Jordan here is one of them, and I'll let him speak a little bit more on his duties here in a second. But it's kind of a checks and balances system. So when we're out at practice and games, you know, the coaching staff kind of runs the show, and, you know, running practice, running games, just like any normal football program would. However, when you get to behind the scenes and you get to the administrative part of things, that's where the students kind of take over. And we usually have 5 student leaders, a president, a vice president, a treasurer, a fundraising chair, and then a risk manager, which is someone who, you know, needs to be CPR, AED certified, and those sorts of things. And there's like I said, a checks and balances system. But I'll turn it over to Jordan and kind of let him talk about what his role is and kind of the ins and outs of running a team from behind the scenes as a student organization.
Yeah, that's a great question, Bobak. So, yeah, I am the fundraising chair for our team this year. I served in this role for about the latter half of last season and now for the entirety of this season. So this past offseason was my first year going through a full planning of a season, setting what our monetary dues look like for our players, because that's something we have to deal with as well as in terms of our self-funding. But I think the perfect example in terms of how we organize our team is that we host fundraisers. So we had a 7-on-7 for our camp, for our students on campus, that was run by our players. I was the head of it. I headed the event, and each of our players just took a team, and they got 6 other guys that they just know from around campus. There are 60,000 people at Ohio State on a daily basis. So that's a lot of people to choose from. And we just organized and we raised money. We went out and we hosted a 7-on-7 tournament for the campus and just made it a student life event. So having that flexibility to host events like that, and being able to really be involved in on our campus really sets us apart from some of the other programs where the athletes may not be seen as quote unquote regular students. But we're out, we're in classes just like everybody else, and we still have the same issues just as regular students. But it goes great to run the team like that.
What kind of requirements does the NCFA put on member teams, or does it? What sort of things does a program have to join them and maintain membership in that association?
So I know you have to be an accredited university for starters, because we get a lot of teams in this league where they're these kind of Bishop Sycamore type programs where they try to, you know, pull, you know, a bunch of kids from a certain area and say, you know, they're going to put them in college classes, but really there's not a lot of that going on. So you have to have, first of all, be associated with an accredited university. We have to pay a membership fee every year to the league. That league membership fee varies. It's usually in the realm of, you know, $1,500 to $2,000. And that includes, you know, about 12 league branded game balls. And that includes also, you know, the money for them to put on a semifinal and a national championship event. And so you've got to pay those fees every year to be a part of the league. I have to be an accredited university. And then the students have minimum academic requirements to be able to play as well. Our league requires a 2.0 GPA and also requires that a student be enrolled in at least 6 credit hours or be a graduate student in a degree-seeking program. So there are some requirements to be a part of the league, but ultimately, as long as you're an accredited university attached to an accredited university, you can have a team as long as you have enough to build a roster and you have enough to pay the league dues every year.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, I find this fascinating because in addition to, you know, covering football in the United States, we look at football around the world. And when you see, for example, in England, where they do actually have a surprisingly large college football scene there, but it's all club. It's all very similar to what you're describing. And it's fascinating to see this growth, because as you said, it was founded as a league really in 2009, 2010. To see this growth within the United States, because there's just so much demand to field football teams and to participate in football. A lot of people played it. They want to do it. But I know whenever we've contacted those in England, that's exactly how they run it. It's a little – I think it's somewhere in between, because just in general, as we know, in the United States, we take college sports really seriously compared to the rest of the world. So it may be somewhere a little bit in between in some places and somewhere very similar to this. But I find it utterly fascinating. And I mean – because, I mean, there's schools that used to sponsor football, like Vermont. Gosh, you know, who knows back in the day. But it's kind of awesome that they have a football team at any level. And I think it's wonderful that it's here. You know, how – one of the things we've discussed, because a few weeks ago, we talked with an equipment manager at a program. And we were talking about, you know, how often do you have to replace equipment? So, and that's something that I know, you know, has to be done. How do you guys handle that? Because the wear and tear – as a tackle football team, how do you guys go about, how often do you find yourself having the need to replace equipment? And in terms of budgeting each year, where do you see most of your budget going to? What aspects of running the program, not just equipment, but what other logistical aspects?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So in terms of equipment, all of our players were required to provide our own helmet. A lot of guys, such as myself, we get ours from our high school right after we graduate. For example, I sent a text to my high school coach. I was like, just like, hey, can I buy a helmet off of the team? And he was gracious enough to let me buy one. So we all have to provide our own helmets. But then we also, as a team, we provide shoulder pads to all of our players. I wasn't here when this happened, but a few years ago, there was a donation from the Varsity Ohio State team. And they donated about maybe 50 or 60 shoulder pads to our team. And that's what we loan out on a year-to-year basis. So players don't have to come out of pocket for that, which is a really great way that Ohio State football showed gratitude to us. In terms of our other expenses, travel is a big one. Whenever we have to travel more than about four to five hours, we have to get hotel reservations. So that's a pretty big expense. This year, we're traveling to Loyola, Chicago. So we will have to go. We're going up to Chicago the night before or the afternoon before. And we'll spend the night up there on the north side of Chicago. Also, for the playoffs and national championships, we have to, those are hosted at a neutral site. Thankfully, the national championship site is within a day's driving distance of us, but we do have to still spend the night there. So those are, we plan for having three overnight trips this year. And like Coach Greger was talking about, the league fee is another big expense. And also making sure that we have the league fee paid and paying referees. Referees for our home games, those are, that's part of the league bylaws, is that all home teams are responsible for paying their own referees. And Coach Greger, he's been great about finding the connections for the referees. So we're we've been gracious enough to have NCAA referees. One game we actually had SEC refs, so that was pretty fun with the Big Ten bias against us. So, but overall, it's been great, and that's how we're able to sort of fund our team, run our team, and where most of our money ends up going to.
I wasn't sure if you wanted to add more to that, Coach, but that was a very thorough answer.
No, I mean, it's really what it is our kids have to provide most of their own equipment because, you know, obviously a helmet, I mean, a good helmet, brand new, costs you $400 or $500. And obviously when we're self-funded, we try to keep the pay-to-play dues as low as we can so it's easier for us to recruit. So the big expense for kids is, you know, is the helmet. Like Jordan said, we have probably 40, 50 sets of shoulder pads that we can loan out on a year-to-year basis to our kids. But in terms of equipment, they have to provide all their own. And then, you know, the university kind of has, you know, we have our practice field directly south of the horseshoe, you know, goalposts in a nice brand new turf field where the marching band practices. But we don't have a locker room or anything like that. So when practice is over, kids take their stuff, throw it in the trunk of their car usually, and come back the next day ready to go.
So just want to do a quick station ID. You're listening to RCFB Talk 78. My name is Bob Akhayeri. We're talking NCFA club football with Ohio State head coach James Greger Jr. and left tackle Jordan Griffith Simon. Simon, is it Simon? I'm sorry, Simon, right? Or did I?
It's actually Simone.
Simone, you know. Hey, and you know what? I always feel terrible because my name is really easy to mangle. So whenever it's ironic, you know, I grew up in Bakersfield, right? So like all my friends' names were Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and then here I'm like Bob Akhayeri. I have an apostrophe in my name. You know, so I feel always awful whenever I botch anything. So, which I do a lot because I'm terrible with names. Enough about me. So again, we're talking about you know, how the system, how the logistics of running a team and playing. You know, as far as coaching, it's got to be, I imagine, Coach Greg, it's got to be different to plan for teams, because it's not like, you can't really, do you get footage of previous games that you can study from, or do you go in a little blind when you're playing some of these other programs?
Not for the most part, we do. We do have a film exchange with some of these other teams. Sometimes the film quality is better with other teams than others. But for the most part, since I've been head coach for the last 4 years, we've had at least one game of film to go off of for just about every team that we play. You know, sometimes it's different. For example, with Toledo, just having played them on Sunday. The last game they played in 2021 was against us. And, you know, we won that game, and then we played three more games all the way going to the national championship, and their season ended that day. So we didn't have any film to go off of since that game, and they had three games to go off of on us. We do we have partnered with a local kind of a mom-and-pop almost streaming service that's offered to do our games for free. They also do some local high school games. You know, unfortunately for us, we don't have a press box. We just kind of have a tower that the marching band uses. So in the event of inclement weather, the fine folks who do our games are kind of at the mercy of whatever the weather is that day. But we do usually have at least one game of film to go off of for every opponent. The teams in our league are very familiar with each other. And for the most part, have a good relationship and are willing to swap tape. So usually we have at least one game of film for every opponent. It's very rare at this point where we will go in blind. It does happen every so often, but I would say eight, nine times out of 10, we'll at least have one game of film to go off of for every opponent.
I just wanted to remind folks who are listening that if you have questions, our guests are kind enough to be willing to answer, but I'm happy to keep going because I've got lots. You know, one of the things you brought up that was interesting were these non-conference games. And I know, for example, some programs on the rise or sort of at the edges of legitimacy at any level of college sports will sometimes add programs from club sports and some of the programs in NCFA. And also, I mean, some of these programs are pretty isolated from the others. Like when you look at, for example, the teams in the North Atlantic South or in the South Atlantic, it seems like the drives get quite significant for some of those programs where it would get difficult. What sort of teams, you mentioned, you know, the JV teams at a Division III school. And I know, for example, some NAIA programs also have JV squads. How do those sorts of games get arranged and how frequent? I mean, obviously right now, as you said, your conference is very full and it's a wonderful thing about conferences. You have games that are set and you don't have to worry about finding opponents. But you seem to at least have an understanding of what it's like for some of these other programs. How do they go about building these schedules?
You know, it, like you said, it kind of depends on their location and where they're at, and also kind of the skill level that they're at. You know, a lot of club teams, you know, the teams that are in the South in our league, the Gordon States, Columbus State, formerly Middle Georgia State, some of those schools have a little bit of funding from their universities and kind of operate like JUCOs because they're in the South where there's a lot of football talent. And a lot of those programs operate, like I said, like JUCOs where you play your freshman and your sophomore year, and then you try to get your grades up to go elsewhere. And a lot of, you know, there's a lot of football teams down there and a lot of, like I said, kind of different versions of Bishop Sycamore, a lot of teams that identify as prep programs that, you know, are just looking for games. Now, like you said, we're very lucky in that there's seven teams in our conference. So we have six games. The NCFA has an 8-game regular season schedule. So we play six league games, one non-league game and a bye week. And so we filled that one open week we had with Denison's JV team because it's a good, I think it's a good stepping stone for us. It kind of is a good kind of a benchmark for where our team is. When you can go in and play an NCAA team with a full coaching staff and paid coaches and things like that, I think it's always a good benchmark to see where your program stands. And so it's nice to play one of those games every year. But you know, some of those, like I said, the Southern schools kind of have access to a few more programs because there are so many prep programs in that area of the country. But we're lucky in Ohio. There's quite a few Division III schools and most of them do play probably a 5-game JV schedule. So we have the opportunity if, you know, as Jordan alluded to earlier, there's conference realignment almost every single year. So, in the event that our conference shrinks or expands, or the season schedule expands, we have the opportunity to try to reach out to some of those schools and get a JV game scheduled with them.
Are most of these JV programs really open to these kinds of, I guess, cross-divisional play or cross-association play?
Yeah, the JV programs are because they really just want to develop their young players, you know, their freshmen and their sophomores. A lot of these D3 programs have over 100 kids. They're either at or over 100. I mean, you go to a program like Mount Union at the Division III level where they're always in the top five of the country. I mean, they've got 200 kids on their roster. So they could field two JV teams if they really wanted to. So, you know, but I would say on average, some of these D3 schools in Ohio have about 100, 150 kids. And so they're usually pretty open to playing those, you know, non-divisional, like you said, games, cross-divisional games, just because it's an opportunity for them to get film on their young players and put them in game situations. And that's kind of the benefit for them. It's kind of a no risk. You know, they can see their threes and fours in a game situation. And then for us, it's a great measuring stick, like I said, to put ourselves against, NCAA opponents, paid coaching staffs, and kind of see where we stand.
So, again, this is RCFB Talk 78. We're talking NCFA club football with Coach James Grega and Jordan Griffith-Simone, left tackle for the team. This is kind of an opportunity to talk about an area of college football I think not everyone's familiar with. So if you have questions, again, we welcome them and we'd love to hear them as we kind of continue. Coach, when you're talking to a potential player, what do you tell them? How do you pitch to them joining the program and what they should, what sort of student you're looking for?
Well, I'll tell you my pitch, and then I'll let Jordan kind of talk about what worked for him. But, you know, really it's – right now we're at – where I said we're at the point where we're able to recruit high school seniors. We've gotten the program to a point where we're being noticed. And so the pitch is really, you know, if we've got a kid – and, again, the schools we're competing against are these Division III, Division II schools competing for kids who are getting looked at by some of them. And really the pitch is, you know, you can go to a Division II, Division III program, maybe sit for a year or two. And, you know, it's a full-time job, right? It's 5-6 days a week. Or you can come play here. You still get the full contact experience. We don't have the resources and the buildings that some of these D2, D3 programs do, but you're going to get the big school experience. You get to go to a place like Ohio State where football is such a big deal, regardless of what level it's at. And like I said, you get to get a degree from the Ohio State University, which has a great alumni base, one of the biggest in the country. And you're going to leave here with a great 4-year degree, and you get to play football in the shadow of Ohio Stadium. And the other pitch, too, that we'll make to kids is, you know, we've sent a handful of kids who have walked on to Ohio State's program over the years. You know, we've been around. This is our 13th season. And I think in those 13 seasons, we've had probably 8 or 9 players earn walk-on spots at Ohio State. Most recently, Chris Booker, who played for me in 2018, walked on to Ohio State from 2019 up until last year, was a wide receiver, only ever made 2 catches last year, but got on special teams by his senior year last year in 2021. He was starting on just about every special teams unit, and he made the last tackle of the Rose Bowl last year. So the pitch that I make to kids is, you know, you can go to a D2, D3 school and you'll have the facilities, you'll have, you'll have great coaching, but also you're going to be at a small school with about 4,000 kids. And you might not play till your junior or senior year. Whereas here, smaller roster size, better opportunity to play right away. And you get to get a degree from the Ohio State University. But, you know, I'll kind of let Jordan talk about what worked for him and what some of the benefits were for him and for him picking Ohio State. Because Jordan could have played at a handful of Division II, Division III schools. So I'll let him kind of talk about why he picked Ohio State.
Appreciate that, Coach. So kind of my story, like I said earlier, I'm from North Carolina, and I'm also an aviation major. So I'm a pilot. Flying airplanes, and being able to pursue that opportunity at a school like Ohio State, and being able to play football is a gracious opportunity. But at the time that I graduated high school, there were no schools in North Carolina with my major that had active flight programs at the time, which led me to the school that I was looking at in Delaware. And then after that recruitment process didn't work out, I was sitting with a Division II preferred walk-on, where the closest airport was 45 minutes away, while trying to play Division II football and make a roster as a preferred walk-on, and some interest from a Division III school that my mom absolutely hated and refused to send me there. So that led me to make a choice to where I could either go to, Delaware State University, and try to walk in cold as a walk-on, which was one of my dream schools. They have one of the best flight programs in the country for my major. Or I could, my scholarship offer came through from Ohio State, and I really had to give them a serious look. And then once I found the club football program at Ohio State, I found that it existed, it was established, they were doing great things. Like I said, they just came off the division championship. Then that almost made me sold. I think I sent my email to Coach Grega before I even sent my commitment letter to Ohio State on the academic end. So I was really excited about the opportunity. I was really hurt. Again, not being able to play the way I went out in my high school career and just having the opportunity to play college football because I felt like I still had more to prove myself. And just being able to have this opportunity here at Ohio State playing very high-level football is great. And also, like you kind of mentioned, Coach, with the JV teams that we play, speaking as a player, we look forward to those opportunities to be able to play against Division II and Division III JV teams because a lot of us as players definitely feel and could know that we could have played at that level and been in the guys that we're lining up across from be in their same shoes. And so being able to play those teams is a gracious opportunity and something that we really cherish. We lost by one score, one touchdown to Denison last year, and that really left a sour taste in our mouth. So these aren't money games that we're playing against these D3 JV teams. We're very competitive in them, and we go in there with the intention to win. So we feel that we can be on those same level with those guys.
That's really interesting insight. You know, we've had actually a couple of folks who wanted to ask questions and I'm going to welcome up Ray Gunn. You've been patient. What's up? What's your question? And sometimes these systems, the unmute's in the bottom left.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, Mike. We jokingly call it the mic monster behind the scenes because with the Twitter spaces, sometimes people will be up and they're like, "Oh, I can't unmute," or the entire system crashes.
Well, I've been set as a speaker for a while, but I was just trying to listen.
Oh yeah, of course.
All right, props to was his name Jordan, the player?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's here.
Hey, congrats to you, man, for finding a school that works for you. I just found a school that I always wanted to go to, so I went to it. Didn't necessarily work out, but I got a good job now. I'm doing well. But props to you, man. Flying planes is scary. But my question was basically related to like injury and how is that dealt with in that situation. I mean, at the top level, obviously they get the best care. I don't know if I missed anything. I apologize. I was trying to make my lunch for tomorrow. I got to go to work. So
sure. So I can talk a little bit about that. We, you know, like you said, football is a violent game and there are injuries. We're lucky enough to where, while we're not sponsored by varsity athletics at Ohio State, we are sponsored by the club sports department here at Ohio State at a place like Ohio State. I'm sure you can imagine there's quite a few club sports. So they do hook us up with the Ohio State Med Center has a number of certified athletic trainers. And they're at all of our practices and all of our games for tape and any kind of treatment that our kids need. And it's kind of the same at a lot of other club programs where, you know, they'll still have in our league, it's the home team's requirement to provide and have an athletic trainer on site for all games. And then we're lucky enough here at Ohio State, it's such a big university and with such a fantastic and worldwide known medical center. We have two or three athletic trainers at every single practice and at every game. So we have pretty good treatment for our players, and we're very lucky to have them. We're very appreciative of all their efforts.
That was really great to hear. I'm happy to hear that. I know I went to Alabama, so you know.
Sorry to hear that.
juggernaut.
Yeah,
whatever you might say, but I do know that club sports were really big there, like the hockey. And a guy I went to high school with actually made it on the club lacrosse team. So it's kind of always been like a burning question in my mind, like how that worked. And like, you know, now I'm 27, but like I've been working for 6 years. And I'm like, oh man, I'm getting older. Like I've been in the workforce and I hate to say it that, you know, I don't think they're kids. They're obviously adults, but like I worry about the future of people because I'm like, man, I made some mistakes, but now I'm figuring stuff out and get better at doing stuff. But I'm glad that they're taken care of with the medical treatment because it would, you know, I mean, it can mess you up, you know. So I'm just glad that they're taken care of. And that was basically my question. I just wanted, you know, to learn a little bit more about something that you don't hear a lot about to find out how everything's going down with that. So I appreciate your answer. Best of luck to y'all.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate yeah, thanks that. For coming on, Ray. That was a good question. It was one I was actually kind of curious about myself because, as you said, safety is important. And, you know, as you said, like a school like in Alabama and their club sports or Ohio State, they've got an enormous, you know, medical they have a sports medicine area that can be flexed to that.
I'd hope they go to, you know, Birmingham for their medical treatment. I lived in Tuscaloosa for a few years, so.
Absolutely. Hey, Andrew, you've been really patient. What's your question?
Hi, yeah. I've been a student at Ohio State for the past 2 years, and I've been following the team for the past couple of years, so I was really excited when I heard that a club football team was formed at Ohio State. I'm a big football fan here. So my question is, you talked a little bit about like how the varsity football team here interacted with you, lent you some shoulder pads. So has there been any further interaction? Like I know Mark Pantone retweeted that your QB got 5,000 yards. Mm-hmm. Has there been any interaction about like doing joint practices, maybe at, like the Woody or using the shoe at all? I know they're very busy and all, but there's definitely been some interaction between the two varsity and club teams.
It's a funny question, Andrew, because the reality is they won't let us touch the horseshoe. They don't let us anywhere near it. They won't let us anywhere near the Woody. They don't let us anywhere near the facilities, really. However, you mentioned Mark Pantone's tweet. I'll give a quick shout out to our quarterback, Kellen Gerenstein, who I see is listening. Kellen is not only a fantastic athlete and a fantastic young man for our program, a captain and a leader, but he's also earned an internship with the recruiting department at Ohio State. Kellen was a guy, is a guy who's a very dynamic football player and a kid who, in my opinion, could have walked on there. It ended up not working out for him, but they respected his knowledge of the game and his demeanor and his professionalism enough to where Kellen is not only our starting quarterback, but he is also a personnel intern at the recruiting department at Ohio State. So, no, they don't interact with us a ton. And a joint practice probably wouldn't go too well for our guys, as you can imagine, with the size difference. However, we do have a pretty respectable group of athletes, and while they don't really let us near the program, they do reach out maybe once a year, or I'll reach out to them and kind of tell them, hey, I've got three or four kids that I think you should take a look at for walk-ons, because Ohio State doesn't really do walk-on tryouts anymore like they used to. So really, you know, if I have three or four kids who I think are qualified athletically, academically, and football knowledge, I'll recommend them to them. But if I said there was a lot of back and forth and talking to the varsity program and Ryan Day's team, I'd be lying. We don't hear from them a whole lot.
You know, that's a fascinating point. There's such a pecking order in all of this. It reminds me of a conversation we had with the Charlotte Sports Foundation, the people who put on what was the Belk Bowl, now the Duke's Mayo Bowl. And, you know, that mayo dump they did at the end of that game, the amount of negotiation they had to do was ridiculous, because the Carolina Panthers did not want them doing anything like that on their football field. Even though, you know, we're talking the sidelines, nowhere near the field. They had to do it on concrete with a tarp. And like, they just like, you're not even going near that field with the mayo, and we will just cancel your bowl game if you even think of doing that. So when I'm hearing what you're dealing with, I mean, even, you know, FBS bowl games deal with this. It's just the pecking order of some of these things, especially with how sacred some organizations treat their home venues. But I got a chuckle out of that. And it's funny too, because you said you played in the Glass Bowl when you're playing at Toledo though.
Well, it is. It's kind of a tough pill to swallow, because University of Toledo and then Miami of Ohio are both in our conference, and both of those Division I, granted, not quite the pageantry of Ohio State, no disrespect to those programs, but and obviously not quite the size either, but When we go to Miami of Ohio and we go to Toledo, those two club programs do get the opportunity to play in their respective Division I stadiums. So, we always look forward to going to those two venues because it is a great opportunity. Like I said, we did just play in the Glass Bowl on Sunday night under the lights, and it was a great opportunity for our kids in a very fun atmosphere. But yeah, I don't anticipate them letting us anywhere near the horseshoe anytime soon.
You know, and Clout Machine, I'm going to let you on in a second. I just have one quick question I wanted to follow up here because, you know, I've noticed your equipment has, you know, Ohio State branding. How does that work? I mean, are you guys basically as a club team automatically granted permission to use most of – and I say this, I'm an attorney in background, so I find the intellectual property aspect of this fascinating and the licensing. How does that work? What room do you get to use things that involve the Buckeyes and the Block O?
We're allowed to use the Block O, and we're allowed to use the name Buckeyes in Ohio State. Other than that, that's kind of it. You know, in terms of like helmet stickers, because each we don't own the helmets and we don't own the stickers. The kids can put on their helmets whatever they want. So we use the same helmet stripe, and then if they want to put Buckeye leaves on them, they can. We don't distribute them for some of the reasons you alluded to. However, the university does allow us, like if we have if we make t-shirts or any kind of apparel, we are allowed to use the Block O. We can't use the athletic logo, the athletic Ohio State logo that the varsity athletic department uses. But we're allowed to use the Block O, and we're allowed to use the name Ohio State and Buckeyes on our jerseys and things of that nature.
That's fascinating. I really appreciate that explanation. Hey, Clout Machine, you had a question. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, I did. First and foremost, I'd like to say this is the company account, but I'm a former, you know, Buckeye student like many of you here, and I, you know, recently graduated, but good to hear from the club football team. I commuted, so I didn't get to spend a lot of time on campus. Main question, what I do, you know, you can see the profile, it's NIL related, and with you guys playing other varsity teams, you're in a very unique situation. I know, you know, you guys clearly, you play for the love of it, literally, to do it at this level that way. You really, really enjoy it. Have you ever thought about there's not a large amount, but there is money in this for you guys if you want there to be. Have you guys thought about that now that NIL is open for the rest of the field? It never applied to you guys. You could always do it, but, you know, there wasn't really a marketplace for it.
Absolutely. It's an interesting question, the NIL and club sports. I never even thought about that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. That's actually a great question. So in terms of NIL, none of our players really have any that kind of social media following. Kellen might have, our quarterback might have the most social media followers on the team due to his football contacts. But we do take sponsorships for our teams from local companies. I actually, since I'm a pilot, I'm also a flight instructor. So I teach people how to fly, and my job actually ended up becoming one of our sponsors for the team. So we're open, especially to any local Columbus businesses that may be listening to this or anything that have thought about wanting to partner with the Buckeyes. This could be an opportunity, but we do take sponsorships from local businesses in exchange for advertising on our social media platforms and then also on our website. But in terms of NIL, like direct deals, like we all know CJ Stroud is driving around campus in his Bentley. Obviously we don't have anything like that, but I think something like that in terms of NIL, I mean, the opportunity really hasn't been presented to us, but I think that's something that could be introduced down the road.
Okay. Well, yeah, let me I'm going to go into DMs later. You guys let me know where to find y'all on campus. I'll pull up.
All right. Absolutely. Yeah, our DMs are open. Feel free to shoot us a DM, Clout Machine. We'll definitely get back to you.
All right. Let's see here. We've got one more question. Cal, what's up? I see another Buckeye. There we go. Sorry. Sometimes I thought I let him up. I didn't. Sometimes my own brain isn't working. It's getting late. Hey, Cal, what's up?
Hey, guys. Coach Jimmy, obviously you're a hero of mine. You know, you have you sent quite a, you know, you talked about the varsity program. You've had a few guys with some amazing success. You know, I think about Chris Booker getting Special Teams Player of the Week, getting a tryout with the Arizona Cardinals. What does a guy like that do for your program? And, you know, how does that play into your guys' recruiting efforts? Can you talk a little bit more about some of the other guys who have come through, either leaving varsity to come play for you or, you know, going vice versa?
Yeah, Kalen, first of all, man, great to hear from you. Kalen's a former teammate of mine with Ohio State Club Football and a good friend. So, Kalen, good to hear from you. It's a good question. Like you said, Chris Booker, I mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, played for me for 1 year and then spent 3 years playing for Ryan Day at Ohio State and ended up getting a walk-on try – or ended up playing 3 years and then getting training camp invites with the Arizona Cardinals and Washington Commanders. And he's currently in the XFL draft pool for November. So we wish Chris the best of luck and hope that an XFL team picks him up, and we'd love to see him play there. But we have had a handful of former Division I players on our roster. You know, last year alone, we had two former Division I athletes. Chris Karras was our starting defensive end, and he had played at Bowling Green. He had been a walk-on at Bowling Green. And then, obviously, during COVID, a lot of teams had to make cuts. And he was from Columbus. He came back to Ohio State. Ohio State wasn't doing walk-on tryouts, so he found us, played for us last year, and was a first-team All-American, helped us win a national championship. And our starting center right now, Sam Backenstow, it's kind of a similar situation. He played his high school ball here in the Columbus area at Hilliard-Davidson, notorious for running the triple option. Then he got an offer to go play at Army, was at West Point for a year. COVID hit, kind of the same thing. Teams had to make cuts. Ohio State's not taking walk-on tryouts, finds us, and he's going on his second year as our starting center. So we've had some tremendous talent come on our team from the Division I level. We had another player by the name of Deshaun White, who played at Powerhouse Canton McKinley down there in Canton by the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and played for us for about two or three games in 2017 before Urban Meyer and that staff offered him a walk-on spot. He spent the rest of 2017 and all of 2018 playing for Urban Meyer as a walk-on wide receiver. And then in 2019, decided he didn't have the time for varsity anymore, but still wanted to play football. So he came back and played for us in 2019 and helped us win our first national championship. So we have, at a place like Ohio State, we are lucky enough to where we've had some great Division I athletes play on our roster. Like I mentioned earlier, our quarterback, Kellen Gerenstein, I think could have been a Division I walk-on, if not at Ohio State, at somewhere else. And then our starting wide receiver right now, Casey Scroggins, is another one where he was actually offered a walk-on spot last year and ended up turning him down because he is a biology major with a pre-med track, and it's hard to play Division I football and be a doctor. So he stuck it out with us, and he's still our number one wide receiver on the team right now. So we are lucky to have some unbelievable talent. And, you know, in Casey's instance, he's also our team president and just an unbelievable leader. And we're lucky to have those guys. And it does do a lot for your program, both on the field and off the field, when you have guys who are not only incredibly smart football-wise, but incredibly smart off the field, helping run the program behind the scenes.
That was really interesting. I mean, I find it utterly intriguing about how these players find their way into the program, and all of these paths make sense. And really, I admit, things I hadn't really thought about. But at a university like Ohio State, as massive as it is, and all the folks that come through the institution, it makes sense. You know, we're going to go ahead and slowly wrap up here, but I wanted to let you both, James and Jordan, tell us a little bit about what would you like our audience to know about Ohio State Club Football before we let you go?
Wow, that's a really open-ended question. I think I would just really lean towards just the fact that we play legit football down here. We consider ourselves just another division of college football. And that we play legit football down here, and that we have legit talent. We have great guys. Coach Greg has just talked about Chris Booker and Deshaun White, both of those guys who are excellent athletes, as well as Casey. I unfortunately didn't have the pleasure of playing with Chris Booker. I came in 1 year after, but I did play with Deshaun and currently play with Casey. And it's just been a pleasure to play with those guys and to know that as an offensive lineman, as long as I do my job, they're going to do theirs. And having that is absolutely amazing. And then just going off of more so of the club sports aspect, I just wish more schools had that opportunity. There was one school in North Carolina, UNC Greensboro, that had a program, but they unfortunately had to fold this year just due to the fluidity of the league. But as a kid who went to high school about an hour away from Greensboro, North Carolina, I know that there's a lot of people in the North Carolina area, in Greensboro and both in the Triangle also, that can play ball. And a school like UNC Greensboro can mimic their opportunities off of those type of Georgia schools and making, even treating it like a JUCO. And I think that could be the future of club football. I'll be remiss if I don't mention Chase Soper, who I think is definitely one of the best players that this league has ever seen. He was the quarterback for George Mason last year, and we faced him twice in our both in the regular season here in Columbus and in our national championship game. And he absolutely lit the league on fire as a quarterback, transferred out of James Madison, came to George Mason, lit the league on fire, and then now he's back at Division I at Wofford. So he's definitely a great talent. I don't know him personally, but after playing against him twice, he's been his story is also a great one, similar to Chris Booker and getting to that Division I level, and now he's playing FCS ball. So that would be all I would leave it with, and I would just say to any high school athlete who may be listening, consider a club program. If you, like Coach Greg said, if you have the grades to get into a school like Ohio State or any other club program in our league, give us a look. If that D2 or D3 school doesn't have your major, or you would be making a 45-minute drive to the airport like I would have been, give Ohio State a look. Give club football a look, and you'll definitely have opportunities to keep playing ball.
And then I'll kind of close on and kind of piggyback off what Jordan said. Club football is a great opportunity to continue to play, you know, this game that we all love. You know, I think when people hear club football, they immediately kind of stick their nose down at it because – or stick their nose up at it, rather, because they think it's flag football and they think it's you know, intramurals or something like that. But, I mean, this is full contact, 11-on-11 ball. We have a great league with a ton of great teams. You know, there's only 20 teams right now, but at its peak, I think in the mid-2010s, we were at 30. Obviously, COVID knocked a few teams out with funding and lack of funds, but what club football has done for me has given me an opportunity to not only play football again when I thought my playing career was over after high school, but it also gave me an opportunity to start my coaching career, albeit as a volunteer. But you know, my goal obviously one day is to be coaching full time at a paid program, and you know, somewhere down the line. You know, for now, I love this program. It's where I played. It's where I've kind of grown as a player, as a coach, as a person, really. And the goal is to ultimately move on. But for right now, I love this program. This league is a great opportunity for anyone who is, you know, wanting to continue playing football at the college level, like kind of like Jordan said. And it's a great opportunity if you're an aspiring coach. I see one of my assistant coaches right now, Owen Sabo, is listening. Owen is a kid who played at Division I St. Ed's up in Cleveland, Ohio, which is a perennial powerhouse in the state and in the country some years. Came to Ohio State and, you know, didn't want to play anymore, but he knew he wanted to get into coaching and joined our staff and has been invaluable through this first month of the year. It's a great way to get into coaching. It's a great way to continue playing, but it's also a great opportunity if you want to coach football. It's a great place to get your feet wet, because if we have 20 teams in the league, I would have to bet that 15 of those 20 teams, their coaches are volunteer and unpaid, and no head coach is going to say no to free help, so including myself. So it's an opportunity where, you know, you continue your playing career or you can start a coaching career. And the NCFA is a league that I hope continues to grow because it creates a lot of great opportunities for a lot of great people. And, you know, I think club football, when people hear that, I think the goal that I've tried to make for myself and for the league and for our team is that our team, our program is one that's taken seriously. And then hopefully one day the NCFA is a league that gets a little more publicity and is taken a little more seriously on a national level because it's a great opportunity for our kids and for coaches across the country to continue to grow this game that obviously we all love.
Thank you. That was both of those were very compelling, and I really appreciate it. I learned a lot during this talk, and I hope our audience did as well. Thank you both for joining us. Good luck. The rest of the season obviously just started. We hope you three-peat as national champions, as right now the undisputed number one team in the land in NCFA. So thank you both for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, Bobek. And keep sharing our content. We greatly appreciate the publicity and the greatness that Reddit College Football provided to both our team and our league.
Absolutely. We'll continue to give love to NCFA football. I think that's really important. And you guys have, I mean, it's what we thought. You are who we thought you were. No, I mean, it is exactly as interesting as we thought it was. So thanks again to head coach James Grega Jr. and Jordan Griffith Simone, left tackle for the Buckeyes club football team. My name is Bob Akayiri. I'm hosting tonight. Thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight. We appreciate whenever you do. Now I'm going to hang up and listen.